Welcome to So Many Bits. I'm your host, Bill Nielsen, and joining me once again from this palatial VoIP line in the middle of the internet is Shelby Mongan. Shelby, how are you?
You know, I'm good. I am contemplating the nature of reality and the hidden worlds therein. So, you know, a pretty typical day for me. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm contemplating the need for, like, say, the Nintendo Game & Watch and, like, rationally, I've decided I don't need this thing. I don't need another way to play Super Mario Brothers. I don't need a clock. And nevertheless, every time I see like another tweet go up for like, hey, we've got them in stock. There, you can order it here. I'm like, ugh. So that's how I'm doing.
Yeah, it's a need that transcends actual need and gets deeper. And that is you know what? That's a voice you should listen to. That's like, it's a me, that voice that you should listen to. Consume. No,
the dark tendril of capitalism slips into our ear and touches our brain and causes us to rot from the inside, but to also expend our wallets.
Yeah, I think that's isn't that the plot of the new Beans? I messed up the joke because I forgot the game. Shoot, what's the deep Baldur's Gate? Dang it, brain.
Oh, Death Stranding, right? We're talking about Death Stranding?
No, because Baldur's Gate starts with a mean, mean boy putting a gross thing in your ear.
I thought that was where you, like, you name a word and then you, like, figure out, like, if you have a fake definition or, like, the real definition for the word.
Is that Balderdash? Oh, it is. That's the joke. I got it. Okay, I'm here.
No, wait. Isn't Balderdash the one where, like, you have to run away from the boulder and, like, you have to, like, go down different corridors and stuff and pick up gems?
No, that's Zelda. Bill, I thought you understood what Zelda was.
Wait, Zelda is the green guy, right? The green guy?
This would be my Twitter feed if you also just added in some hot political takes and some some questionable art that maybe I shouldn't have on my screen if I was in public. And this is just what my Twitter feed feels like. And I love it.
Defund the police. Sorry. you know, Shelby, it's been a minute. We haven't talked too much lately, which I deeply regret and is 100% my fault. But I do want to check in and ask that interminable question. Hey, Shelby, what you playing?
It's a good question. So I am playing some of the same old things. I find the older I get, the longer it takes me to get through any game that I start because various forms of life continue to happen. But the two big things that I think kind of new stuff that I've been playing, one is aggressively bandwagoned, and that is that I have been playing Among Us here and there. And it is just as good as everyone says. So I was going to explain Among Us, but I'm pretty sure no one listening to this does not know the co-op do activities, try not to get murdered by an imposter on a spaceship game. But been playing with some friends on Discord, and it's really fun. I'm very, very bad at being an imposter. I panic aggressively, but it's a super fun game. And I think the thing to me that's notable about it, aside from the fact that it's really fun to play with other people, is that it's such a democratized game. The fact that you can get it on your phone or on your computer, you don't have to have a particularly good phone or computer to play it. It's free to play. Is such a cool option during quarantine to have something. Like, I'll take the ads occasionally at the end because normally I'm talking with people about the end of the round. Don't even notice the ad. I can click right through it and it's really no skin off my back. And it's really cool to have something that is reasonable entry level, though I think it's actually a lot harder to just jump into the game. It helps to have someone play like a one-off round with you and explain the tasks and explain the mechanics and everything. But it's a really fun It's a really fun group experience. Have you gotten to play any of it?
I have. I've played a little, and we're still kind of in that introductory phase where we don't know a lot of like the inner workings of the game. That's made it more fun, I think, because like we have like one or two people in our group who do know all that stuff, but like they're cool about it. Like they don't like, you know, shove it down our throats, but they're just like, you know, hey, just so you know, like there are these activities on the ship that are like you can get visual confirmation on them, and there are others that you can't. And so like these are the ones that do that, and these are the ones that don't do that. It's like, oh, okay, I see what you're getting at there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely some things that, like, if you know, it's fine. But if you don't, especially if you're an imposter, there's one map. There is a task where you have to take your key and put your individual key in a keyhole and turn it. And if one person has that task, everyone has that task. And if no one has, like, either everyone has it or no one has it. And so it can be a good way to try to catch if someone is an imposter, whether they either go and try to fake the task or they don't do it or they don't think to do it or whatever. But it's also hard because if you're playing with people that are ruthless and you don't know that, I figured that out on accident while playing a game with people. As an imposter, it was very stressful. It feels a little alienating. So it's worth playing it with some folks who, one or two folks who know the game well and who are kind until you know the game pretty well overall.
The imposter stuff, it's true. It's sometimes like you can still like at our level get the free wins where like you know, someone will sabotage something and like we literally just don't know where to go and what to do.
Right.
And the timer will run out.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're starting to see, like, people who are, like, getting adept at lying. Like, I'm getting a little better at, like, knowing, like, the ins and outs of stuff and, like, tendencies and, like, predictable behavior and, like, kind of how to subvert that, stuff like that. It's a...
Even just where tasks are. If you're going to fake a task and you don't... especially if you're not familiar with the map or the game at all, you don't know where to go fake tasks. And it's a lot harder to lie about what tasks you're doing if you don't know what you're faking. So there, it's definitely, it's a learning curve, but it's a worthwhile learning curve. I also just think the minigame tasks are fun, and I kind of just want to hang out with people and like chat in Discord and do tasks and fix the ship. Cause they're very pleasant little like tactile activities.
My favorite / least favorite is the swiping the ID card. That's one where like you can get really stressed out, like trying to do it the correct way. It seems pretty finicky where it's like, if you do it too slow, it's wrong. If you do it too fast, it's wrong. So you have to do it like with just the right rhythm.
Yeah.
I can imagine that leads to some tense, you know, arguments later on.
I have also watched some streams of people spending an entire section of a round attempting to get their ID card to work and having it not function. I also would be bereft if I didn't mention while we are talking about Among Us that AOC played on Twitch with people as a get out the vote. And it was so charming. And if you are at all a fan of hers or interested in her, like, or interested in the weird place that politics exists at in 2020 and like the good version of it, go watch her and like Ilhan Omar attempt to play Among Us and panic. It's very fun, and it's cool to see some big streamers on Twitch playing with her as well, and getting to have that kind of casual fun. That was a really amusing evening in a sea of anxiety and stress. That was a nice little island of happy.
It's propagandizing, but it's from people I like, so it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been fun playing it sporadically, The true reason I have been contemplating the multiplicity of the world, hidden things, is because of the game that's not a video game that is a video game that I have been playing that is on a break right now but is soon to come back, and that is the internet obsession of Blazeball.
Shelby, I am so glad that you have been watching Blazeball. I need to know what this is.
Yeah, so I'll give you as best I can of an elevator pitch. I came into it late because I think like any hashtag very online person, saw rumblings of Blazeball, but maybe didn't know over the course of the summer, maybe didn't quite know what it was. And then I watched a wonderful explainer video from one of my favorite kind of video game and essay, like video essay style YouTubers, breaking down the game and explaining it. And as soon as I watched that video, I signed up and started playing. And then I forced my husband to start playing too, and he got equally obsessed. So Blazeball is a online, browser-based baseball betting, baseball fan simulator. The idea with it is once an hour, so every single hour over the course of a season for 99 hours, so it's during the course of the week, games of Blazeball are played, and it is similar to terrestrial baseball, but there are key differences. But essentially, they've created characters, and they run a simulation of a baseball-esque game. They have a, on the surface, a very simple number of aspects of like their ability to bat for defense, their pitching ability, etc. But on the back end, there are legions of very strange statistics that together make up your like pitching ability. But so they have these characters and they basically run a random simulation of teams playing against each other. And the game part of it is that you, over the course of the week, you go in and you bet coins on games, and they give you the statistical breakdown of who's likely to win. You bet on games once an hour, if you can, and you win coins back, and then you bet on more games, and maybe you buy some totems and have an idol set up. So maybe you're a favorite character or a really good character. Every time they hit a home run, you get extra coins. And you're just kind of building your number of coins and betting on games. I mean, that's the fundamental basic part of the game. The reason that people are obsessed with...
Yeah, that feels like it doesn't tell the whole story.
Right. Well, like, and that's the mechanism of it, right? It's pretty straightforward at its core. However, there's kind of two reasons I think people are obsessed with Blazeball. One of them is that it's weird. It just is weird. What happened last season? So last season... Oh, I don't even think I can explain that, because that would be a whole podcast in and of itself, how to explain how we got to there. But there are things like we opened a forbidden book. So every week at the end of the season, so the end of the week, you can use your coins and you can vote for blessings for your team and for decrees. Blessings go to individual teams, and it's a lottery based on, so you have better chances the more votes you put in for your team to get it. And then decrees apply to the whole kit and caboodle. They apply to everything. And very, very early on in the game, one of the decrees simply said, open the forbidden book. And because it is the internet, everyone voted for that one, and they opened the forbidden book. Among the things that came out of the forbidden book were strange weather patterns, like blood drain, where there was a chance that some players could drain the blood from other players and get stat boosts.
I have a question, sidebar. Weather patterns and blood drain.
I mean, one of the other weather patterns is birds, so like... Weather is a loose term here. It's very, like, humorously eldritch. Everyone compares it to Welcome to Night Vale in aesthetic, but it's similar in a lot of ways, but that's sort of, like, humorously dark. There was a whole thing with Peanuts and the Peanut God. The last season, a bunch of dead players came back to life. Also players can die. They can be incinerated by rogue umpires. That was also something that happened. But dead players formed a team to defeat the Eldritch-style god, the Shelled Ones, which is a peanut god, to defeat their mega team. So a bunch of shelled players that were, for all intents and purposes, dead were playing for the evil gods. And a bunch of dead players were resurrected by a community effort to defeat those players. And so it's just strange, right? Like the Cliff Notes is that it's bizarre and interesting. And it's always one of the exciting things is like, what the heck are they going to do next? How much more complicated is this going to get? How much weirder is this going to get?
I'm getting the sense that it's a piece of collaborative, interactive fiction. Is that fair?
I think that's 100% fair. Because the other thing, so I said the two things that people like, right? One of them is how weird Blazeball is. But the other is the fact that it is such an intense community. And that things like trying to figure out what the game wants you to do and then trying to do it as a community of literally like tens of thousands of people, and at least thousands of people on like the Discord, trying to coordinate different activities and voting and the way that they do things. Each team is based off of a real place, except for the Sunbeams, who are now from the Hellmouth. Though I think they were from an actual city, but
Hellmouth is a real place.
Well, they used to be from like Houston or something. Like they were from a regular city, okay. And then the Hellmouth opened up. Yeah,
that's fair.
But each team has their own kind of individual culture. There is a whole channel for propaganda on the Discord of people like messing with each other, lovingly smack talking, trying to win certain decrees and blessings. There's a ton of community art. There is a band that makes Blazeball music that's like actually really fun and good. All kinds of interesting, weird, fun stuff happens. And the community is incredibly kind, incredibly collaborative. And they're building so much out of, I mean, genuinely randomly generated names. We've been creating full lore, art, backstories, interactions, relationships between all the characters. It's really, it's such a fun thing. If you're the sort of person that like, you like getting involved with that kind of fun community spirit, you're willing to like be on the Discord and chat and collaborate and get invested, it's a great thing for you. If you just want to mess around with the betting and generally keep up with the lore, that's also cool too. But it's definitely, it's this wonderful, wonderful thing to have come out of the pandemic, because it came out in the summer. It was supposed to be this one-off little thing, and it just exploded, and the team that runs it is running with it and is making it something really incredible. So it's on a siesta right now, and that's largely because they have to do a lot of work on the servers, A, because they made the game a lot more complicated last season with some of the decrees, but B, because the user base has been exploding recently, and so they're setting up the servers to get prepped for the game to start again. And this is a great time to jump in, because you can start slowly, chat with people on your team, get to know them, get to know the game, and be prepped for when Blazeball starts up properly again. So I'm not saying you should, but you should play Blazeball.
Was Goku in Blazeball recently?
People have done Goku adjacent things. And there's a solid chance someone is named Goku, but not actual Goku.
I'm going by tweets I saw like last week of like, it looked like an event where an angel that looks like Goku showed up in Blazeball. Googling it, I instead get an Amazon listing for a Funko Pop showing Goku in a baseball uniform. So I'm definitely don't have a basis for, finding any further information.
That might have either been in reference to Jalen Hot Dog Fingers at the end of the Shelled Ones playoff at the end, or maybe in reference to Parker's trial, which are two things that are hard to explain unless we have more time, and I'll do that separately if you're interested. if you find that meme, send it to me. I'm also happy to be a Blazeball meme translator if you don't get into it, but Bill, I'm just saying you should definitely get into it, and you should root for the Chicago firefighters so you can come hang out with me in that Discord, because they're really fun. But it's very fun. It's a lot of fun. It's very strange. It's a little bit of work to get into, but I think the dividends are pretty vast. It's a lot of fun, and I'm dying for the seasons to start properly again.
I wanted to know more, and I have to say, I am not disappointed in what I found out.
Yeah, I have things to send you if you want to learn more, too. I'm just, like, quietly trying to get people that I think will enjoy. Blazeball is also, it is wonderful, and it is an acquired taste. Like, it is for certain people, and it is a super-duper not for other people. But for the people that I think will like it, I'm like, maybe you should just, like, you should just sign up and try it. Hoping to get them as hooked as our household is. But enough about Blazeball. Bill, what are you playing?
Well, there's actually a game I wanted to talk about that I really meant to talk about during the last games played, you know, discussion, but I plumb forgot, but it still is relevant. So I want to talk about it now, and that is Super Mario 35.
Yes, I have been watching a lot of this game.
So Super Mario 35 is the latest take on the Battle Royale format, which has been popularized with like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and Fortnite, and then also even stuff like Tetris 99, except now there's 35 people instead of 99. And you are playing the original Super Mario Brothers, except you are simultaneously competing against the other 34 people in your round of play to see who is the last person alive at the very end.
And it's a perpetual loop, right? Like you're playing, you're constantly getting taken to next, to other stages. And even if you're cycling through like all of the one dash insert number here stations, you're constantly playing. So it's really just like, how long can you last without dying?
That's right. Yeah. That's I think something that, beginner players like don't get right away is like, it's not really about like speeding through the levels or like trying to beat the game per se or anything like that. It's more about just like surviving and making sure you are stocked up on, just as you would in many other types of battle royale games, make sure you have the right supplies. And in this case, that means you want to have the ability to kill enemies quickly and efficiently.
Especially given that every enemy that you kill gets sent as a grayed out, but as an enemy that someone else has to deal with. So what gets hard is towards the end when people are getting, you know, 17 Goombas, 12 Koopas, 2 Lakitus, and a Bowser thrown at them in the middle of 1-2.
What's interesting about that is, like, there's a big curve in difficulty. Like, you know, if you... in most levels, if you like put any number of Goombas and Koopas in front of me, I could defeat them all, which is really good for you because you get a huge time bonus. Every time you defeat an enemy, you get a time bonus, and then you get a multiplier if you defeat a bunch of enemies in a row, which you can do just by, like, you know, being good at jumping, or you can get a star. And if you get a star, you can just run through all the enemies and get the bonus that way. Or you can also get a POW block, and that'll instantly kill every enemy on screen. It's when you get to the enemies like the piranha plants. So it's possible to, you know, kill a piranha plant with a fire flower power-up, and then it'll be transported to some really weird spot in the other person's level. It'll just be, like, not in the pipe. It'll just be on the ground somewhere, and you have to deal with it. Or Bowser. Bowser is a big pain in the butt. Or Lakitu in the Hammer Brothers.
Yeah.
Like, those are the ones that, like, if you get, you know, a bunch of... you can have, like, you know, 3 Bowsers on screen at once, and a Hammer Brothers, and, like, a Lakitu. And then you could be in trouble. It's actually...
sorry.
It's really funny sometimes with some of the stranger enemies that you can kind of pull into the other stages. So, like, if you go to the 4th level of any world, that's Bowser's Castle. And there are these little fireballs that'll, you know, be spit out of the lava periodically. You can kill those and then transport them into other people's games, which is pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
Because they'll just show up anywhere at any time for, you know, at any spot.
You really have to be on your toes. And you have the option, too, to choose who you're targeting. So it can be random. Or you can focus on the person who has... I think it's the most coins, the least time, and there's some other option as well, but there's a little bit of strategy because you can also see. So the cool thing is the screen, right? You're playing Mario in the middle, but along the sides are squares, 34 squares, and you can see everyone else's game. And if you pay attention, you can see where they are. You can see if they have a power up, you can see what level they're in. And so there's some strategy with, like, oh, this person that I'm going at, I've got a star, but, oh, they're small. Okay, cool. I'm going to throw as much as possible at them. And there's some interesting higher level strategy if you're good at Mario, to try to, like, work hard to secure a win.
And it's certainly been refreshing that, like, you know, I liked Apex Legends a lot, but as I've, you know, mentioned on here multiple times, I was terrible at it because I didn't shoot well. But, you know, in Mario, I'm like, yeah, I know how to, like, jump on Goombas, and, like, I'm good at, like, you know, using shells and, like, the Fire Flower and stuff. So, like, I feel a lot more comfortable with that aspect. So then I can get to that high level of engagement and, like, do those strategies you're talking about, where it's like, you see, oh, they're in 1-3. That's a level with a lot of platforming. Let's spam that person with enemies, you know?
Right. And it's also, it does the thing that Fall Guys, I think, does really well as well, which is that if you lose, it's not the worst. You can just start again. And it's, like, not that long to pick up a game. And it's kind of no... It's not that much skin off your nose if you lose a game, right? It doesn't feel as punishing. It doesn't feel as bad. You can roll back into it and keep going. And that, oh, but this is the time that I'm going to improve, or this is the time I'm going to win. It's the same thing that Fall Guys has absolutely demolished and does fantastically well. And I think Mario 35 does too.
The distinction between, like, Fall Guys and, like, other battle royales, where I think Mario 35 falls down a little bit, if you, that was unintentional, I swear, like, I was really not planning on that, is that their end game for Mario 35 is just not as refined as it is for the other competitors, because mm-hmm. I've gotten pretty good, and, like, I can get to, like, the top five pretty comfortably most of the time. And what happens is you kind of hit an equilibrium where, like, yeah, you're passing enemies back and forth, but, you know, you have your Fire Flower power up, you have a bunch of coins. You, by the way, you get coins periodically throughout the game for doing various things, and then you can spend those coins to get extra items. And so you're not really at a risk to die anymore. And, you know, there's a timer that's constantly running down that you have to replenish by killing enemies, but because there's, like, so many enemies going back and forth now, everyone's, like, their timer's going pretty good. They're pretty healthy. Like, you got a couple hundred seconds on there. And then in the very late game, it just becomes, like, who can, like, keep their timer high and just, like, kind of ride it out, because they're just not in significant danger of dying anymore. And I've had, like, several games where it got down to that point where it was just, like, we're just kind of running through the world. It's, like, our, you know, 10th time or, like, 15th time going through level 1-1 and just, like, seeing who screws up first or who eventually runs out of time. And that would be, like, you know, in Fortnite, that's the equivalent. Does Fortnite have the gas? Like, I know PUBG, they have the gas.
Yeah, they have the bubble, like, if you get stuck outside the bubble, essentially.
Okay, perfect. It'd be like if the majority of Fortnite games or PUBG games came down to, like, the bubble or the gas, like, finally settling in and everyone's just kind of, like, waiting.
Yeah, and I think that some of those games do that, right? That end game is such a hard space, because I think the pleasant tweak would be to give a little bit more power or agency to the players, or force them into, I don't know, to a higher level of the game, or add other enemies, or there, like, something else that you can do to try to handicap your opponent. But yeah, I can see it sort of stalling there, and it's probably a little bit less fun to just wait for the other person to screw up and hope that you don't. But it's still and it's free, right? Like, I think for a pretty easily accessible battle royale game, it still does a darn good job.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you know, if you have Nintendo Online, it's free, and Nintendo Online is $20 a year. And I would think that, like, anyone would play it a little bit at least and find some fun doing that.
Yeah, even if you're terrible at Mario, it's not worth downloading and playing at least some of. And maybe you'll get better at Mario. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, right in time for the Mario Game & Watch.
There you go. Exactly.
So yeah, so that's Super Mario 35. Another game that I only have actually played this during my Extra Life stream, but I liked it a lot, and I definitely, definitely want to play more of it, is Hades.
Ah, yes. Speaking of my Twitter feed, yeah. Everyone and their mother is obsessed with this game and are horny on main for it.
Yes, yeah. Hades is it's a roguelite style game where you are Zagreus, the son of Hades.
Zagreus, and, right?
Wait, what did I say?
You said Zigazagoon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. Zagreus. Zagreus?
I think it's Zagreus. I think it's like the beginning of that one part of the Spice Girls song, the Zigazaga, but you just add Agrius onto it. I don't know. I also just see the name constantly, so I that's how I say it in my head. It might not be accurate.
Zigzag, I've been taking a bath. Yeah, so you're this dude and trying to escape hell, and you're like a warrior, so you like kind of punch a bunch of people, but they're all like Greek-like and stuff. So there's cyclopses and Greek skeletons, and sometimes you run into like kind of the employees of the underworld, and they're like, you can't leave hell. You're dumb. And then you're like, nah, you are the one who is dumb. Then you fight. Usually you die. But like that's kind of where I think everyone decides they really like Hades, and I can see why. Is like, you know, this formula for a game is very common, but this is the best implementation of that formula that I've maybe ever seen.
Yeah, you fight and then you probably die. That is the description of the roguelike genre as a thing. But I think the most notable, because I, for one, I have not picked it up yet. And part of that is because I've never been a huge fan of roguelikes. However, it is the game I have heard the most, oh, I don't like roguelikes, but I love Hades. And I think part of that comes down to the execution, to the draw of the genre, of the style of game.
And I can say from someone who does like roguelites a lot that what I think makes this like so appealing and everyone is drawn to it is the characters, and the writing is much stronger than in pretty much any other roguelite I've ever seen, where there is a rich group of characters that you are meeting, and you know, every time you are about to start on a run, you can kind of go and like talk to them. They're all, you know, hanging out in the underworld, and you can learn more about them and why they're there and what their deal is. And as you, you know, as things happen to you in the gameplay, the characters that you have met, they will comment on it when you are, you know, back in the home area. Like, the best one I had was, I found like the first big boss of the game, Megara. And, you know, I fought her once and I lost. And then the second time I fought her, I beat her. Yay. And then, you know, I went on and I died further on. And after that, I went to the like cafeteria basically of the underworld, and she was there, and I went and talked to her, and she's like, Zagreus, you know, when you beat me and then you don't escape the underworld, it makes me look like a punk. So, next time, can you just make it if you're going to beat me?
That's amazing. Also, she's the one. Also, they're hot. Apparently, the art style is unique and beautiful. And there is a reason that people are horny on main for this game. And I think it's exactly as you say, right? It's not just the art style. It's also that these characters are rich and well realized and have personalities. And like, I'm imagining there's probably a part of you that almost looks forward to dying, to go back, to respec, but also to talk to people, to see what they're saying, to interact, to get those story beats and those other pieces involved.
That's exactly true. Yeah. I mean, there's the standard stuff for the genre, like where you go back and like, you know, you can level up your character a little bit, strengthen them in various ways. You can unlock new weapons to use, like, but those are typical of the genre. It's definitely the story and the writing and the characterization that really pushes this over the top. And, you know, I've heard like anecdotally, like, you know, people like they've played, you know, this many times, and they're like, they've never heard like a repeat of certain segments of dialogue, stuff like that. It's like, it's a very well thought out and very industriously planned game.
I was listening to a podcast, a separate podcast. Don't listen to other podcasts though. Just listen to this one. But they were talking about the production of the game and having dedicated people to maintaining and developing the story and write a lot of work on that. they've clearly prioritized it. They understood what they had there and they executed it well. So, I mean, it's awesome. It makes it, this genuinely makes me want to pick up the game. And again, it's not the sort of game I would normally play. But this many people cannot be wrong.
I think you're onto something there. I think, this is a game that when, it's, you know how there's like kind of Oscar season and like, you know, sometimes the timing is right. I think this is a game that's going to like be remembered as like the game of 2020 for a number of reasons, but just like it's peaking at the right time, so to speak.
Yeah. I can't think of a ton of other games that will, I mean, we'll see what the longevity of it is, but I think that this is going to be on game of the year list this year and will go down as potentially game of, you know, game of the decade list and also probably on lists for this hellfire year. To be some of the best, some of the brighter moments of the year.
I think it was the Hard Drive that had like a parody article about that's like gamers flocking to a game about escaping unending misery.
So good.
Yeah. And the last game that I wanted to speak about this one. The last game I wanted to speak about this week is another game that came out last year, and I'm just getting around to it now, but, you know, I'm liking it so far. It's Star Wars Jedi, Fallen Order.
I just like the idea that it is about the colon of a Star Wars Jedi, and it is fallen. But
I mean, that could be what turns people to the brown side.
Oh, no, I regret going in this direction.
Well, we can pull out now, and we can talk about the game. This is a game that, like, on first pass, I was like, this thing looks so generic, and, like, this could be any, like, random action-adventure game, but they put Star Wars on it, so now, you know, it's like a Star Wars game, whoop-de-doo. But I think they have found actually a good place to play in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I haven't seen The Mandalorian. I've heard lots of good things about it. And I think that accomplishes the same thing where it's like someone took like a lemon, but it's a metaphorical lemon that says Star Wars. And they like kind of spritzed it on like, you know, a sort of like action/drama type show. So right. Like, you know, it could be a non-Star Wars show, but like instead here, the main character looks like Boba Fett and there is a little Yoda. And that's like the thing that makes it Star Wars. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, yeah, like The Mandalorian, at least that's take Star Wars and spritz it onto a Western. That's all it is a Western. So yeah, I think that's the place that the genre can really shine is instead of having to be this sort of slavish reproduction, like play in different genres, try other spaces, make a good game and use maybe the lore and the scaffolding of the Star Wars universe. But that doesn't mean that you get to escape making a good game. And it's interesting to hear about this one, that it didn't fall prey to that pitfall.
Right. Yeah. Like, play in other genres is apt because there's a few different genres at work in this game. Like there's a heavy platforming element, not out of place, and say like Uncharted or maybe for your preference, like a Prince of Persia game where like there's a wall run because of course it's Respawn. So there has to be a wall run. You're climbing up surfaces. You're like doing big jumps and stuff like that. Then when you go into combat, the combat is resembling like a Dark Souls game or a Soulsborne game where, you know, it's very disciplined and patient, and you have to like look for the enemy's attack and then parry their attack and then cut them back, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there's even like the corpse run aspect of the Souls games where like if you die, you have to run back to where you were and kill that enemy to get all your EXP back. And then just on top of that is the Star Wars story, which is you are a Jedi and the game is set like somewhere a few years after Revenge of the Sith, where like the Jedi Order has fallen, and you are kind of on the run, but you run into someone who is like, we're gonna get your groove back, we're gonna bring all the Jedis back, it's time for a Jedi jamboree.
How Jedi got his groove back. I like it.
Exactly. Yeah, don't read what happens after that movie, by the way. So like the thing that happens is like you meet this person and they're like, hey, there's this archive that says where every force sensitive person in the galaxy lives. Ew. And like we can use that and go and start up a new Jedi Order. And you're like, okay, I guess we'll go do that. And that's where I kind of left off is like I escaped from bad people. I went to planet number one. Now I'm off to planet number two to like continue that plot.
Interesting. I'm curious to hear more about that, because I feel like that's a plot hook that is interesting and terrifying, right? Because it's good to start a new Jedi Order if you've got that info, but it's also a really good way to murder a bunch of force sensitive people.
It does seem like a double-edged blade there, so we'll see how that develops in the storyline. It seems like there is definitely an opportunity for that knowledge to be abused.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's, where I have to leave off with that, and that concludes all the games I've been playing. So, Shelby, let's bring this episode to a close. Let's set this Star Wars ship down into the Star Wars dock.
A Star Wars dock specifically. No Star Trek docks for this.
No.
This is a so many bits wing. That was my SMB wing ship.
We're gonna lock our SMB foils into attack position.
Exactly. Yes. Huzzah. No, wait, that's a Ren fair. I'm confused.
Dothest Shelbyeth? Dost thou have a place that can be found online? If?
Yes, Squire. No, I'm not going to do it. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shelby_Fawn. Twitter for retweets almost exclusively. And Instagram for pictures of my dog who looks like you electrocuted a sea captain.
You're just one of the Ren Faire goers who's actually a Star Trek cosplayer who's like kind of trying to troll the Ren Faire people.
Listen, am I the sort of person that goes to a Ren Faire in more fantasy adjacent than historically correct cosplay? Yes. Stop persecuting me. But I'm living my life. I'm living my best life. I am the steampunk person that's inexplicably there. Listen, people who like weird costumes got to have a place to gather, sweat, and drink alcohol. And that is what Ren Faire is for. And I hate 2020 for taking it from me. Anyway, I'm online.
I thought that was what the cyber goth raves were for.
Oh, that's the nighttime get sweaty and drunk. You have to do something during the day, too. You got to really keep it rolling the whole time. Yeah.
That's fair. Okay, that makes sense. Well, as for us, we can be reached by email at somanybitspodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, we're So Many Bits on there. Follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at So Many Bits. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Please rate and review or download from Simplecast or stream via Spotify. We play games twitch.tv/somanybits Wednesday and Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central Time. Wednesdays for single-player content and Thursdays for multiplayer content. And last but not least, thank you very much for listening. Have a great summer.
Wow.